Hello, audience. I'm Michael Adam, or Michael Adam, if you will.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Chris. Okay. Yes, I'm one of the Samba developers, and also I'm working for our host, Cernet. And I will report about lessons learned in clustered Samba, so the advances in this area, Samba and CTDB, from the past year, basically since last Samba XP. Clustered Samba is a pretty popular topic. Also, yesterday I gave a one-day tutorial about the topic, and it was very interesting, and it was a very good audience. We had many interesting questions and discussions about this stuff, and I hope with such tutorials and also a talk like this to spread the word of this rather new technology. Let me give you an overview of the talk. I will at first give you a little refresher about what this CTDB is, how we implement Samba in a cluster. I didn't say growing up, but I have a section about growing, how the project has been growing in the last year. I will then detail some of the things we debugged, we added in the last year, and finally I will say about the current and our next projects.
I hope you're not missing anything on the right-hand side of your slides.
Oh, yes, the new Samba logo. What's that? Okay, maybe. Okay, I can again try to change the resolution. But of course, but that's a pity. Huh. Well, let's check. Well, it's better. Okay. Yes, thanks for the hint. Sorry. I have to do one more interruption. This is very embarrassing currently. Wow, I can't find my terminals. Help. Okay, actually I had provided such a deck of slides where I had all these sorts of transitions about the bullet items, but now I have to skip that. This will spoil some of the things. Is there a watch? No, there isn't. Okay. Okay, here we go. No. And now. Okay, I'm sorry, this is going to start really now. Okay, now for the refresh about CTDB. This section is, so to speak, as Volker said yesterday, a gzip of my yesterday's tutorial. So it's just two slides or something, or three. What is the basic idea about this? We should have a cluster file system which we can access from several nodes at the same time. And the basic idea is, hey, why not share this cluster file system via a network protocol like SIFS or even NFS in an active-active fashion? So share this from several nodes simultaneously. There have been active-passive solutions around for many years, but so this idea and this technique is pretty new. Thinking about this a little, this means that in our case, the Samba daemons need to act as one file server across all the nodes, and we need some means of inter-process communication between the nodes. We need messaging and all sorts of volatile and also some persistent kind of data that is shared between the various Samba daemons serving the various connections. Locking data is the most prominent example. The persistent data that needs to be shared is join information, ID mapping in tables, user database, something like that. So basically, all this is centered around this our SMS internal TDB database, and we need a clustered implementation of that. And this is what this CTDB software provides. So it basically substitutes the direct TDB access and provides the backbone for running this in the cluster. What is the history of the project? It was started around 2006, and I think I'm not saying anything wrong if I say the first prototypes were produced by Volker Lennecke and Andrew Twigel. There was a VL messaging branch which implemented this inside Samba, but there was still some kind of single point of failure or bottleneck, and afterwards this was made into a real distributed software called CTDB. And I think it was in 2007, around 3 years ago, when Twigel first presented the first usable version of this software. And as today, he had been hacking until the night before to make it really run. And so I remember this was really impressive. And okay, this is the ground we are building on now. Meanwhile, Ronnie Salbeck is maintainer. He had joined the Samba team around that time also. Also the Wireshark developer, so well known in all this area, and he has taken over after a while. The source is kept nowadays in Ronnie's Git repository, and there are some sort of packages and sources to be found on some subdomain of Samba.org. But a word of warning here, this is not updated as often as it should. And there is also, I have to say another word of warning, there is not such a release process as, for instance, for the Samba software. If you want to incorporate CTDB in your products or in your distribution, please just talk to us developers and check which versions work best together, or if there's a newer version that has not yet made it to the web server or something like that. There is a pretty active community for this. We have an extra IRC channel on Freenode, the CTDB IRC channel, and for mailing and so on, we use the Samba infrastructure, Samba technical mailing list, and the Samba.org Bugzilla also has a CTDB category there. Of course, we are not so many people. Sometimes you have to ask two times or three times to really get the responses you want. But just be stubborn and ask again, please. There is this. I have to close this. It's just okay. I want to explain something about the design about this initial idea. There's these normal databases that contain this data about the SIF session, SMB sessions, and the locking information and so on, that is just related to one session, to one process. And this is the most performance critical kind of data that has to be shared between the processes. And there are several naive approaches for solving the clustering problem here. You can just put these databases onto the cluster file system. This doesn't work. It scales badly. TDB uses makes massive use of fcontrol byte range locks, and this scales negatively on the file system when you add nodes. So this didn't work. There are other database implementations which are already clustered. Also, these general purpose databases were not fast enough, so something special had to be invented. Because the read-write performance is really critical, Windows clients make a lot of use of locking, and when then Samba stores its information into these databases, it protects the writes to the locks, again with byte range locks, and so there are on an active Samba server, there is an awful lot of traffic, read-write traffic on these databases, so good performance was really vital here. The key insight was that there's no need to propagate all changes across all the nodes, because one node does only need to know the data related to its own sessions. And when a node leaves the cluster, I mean, when it just dies or is disconnected, we can and even should lose that data that is just related to its connections. So this was were the key features for this new software, and so just a very little glimpse into the technical realization of it. There are two roles a node can have with respect to one record in the database. There's a typo. It can be the data master that contains the current copy of this record, and there is a location master for a record who can always tell which other node has the current copy, which other node is the data master. So this location master is calculated by a hash algorithm, and the other node, this moves around, the data master role moves around in the cluster, so whenever another node dies, it can lose the information only related to the other nodes. So this is the very brief description of the basic ideas. Then there's a recovery process, which takes care of reestablishing proper state when, for instance, a node crashes or a node enters the cluster to propagate in important information to that new node. And many features have been added afterwards. There's a TCP can take care of distribution of the public, so to speak, IP addresses. It can take care of failover and failback of these addresses when nodes enter or leave the cluster. CDB can even act as a manager for several services such like Samba, NFS, VFS, DPD, and there are many more can be added to, due to a pluggable, pluggable with double G, event script architecture, where you can just add management features for a new service by providing some, short or even elaborate scripts that obey a certain API. So this is basically the design. Let me check what how much time have I spent currently? Because I wanted to ask how many of you have seen CDB in action or have.
You spent
quarter of an hour. Okay, thanks. Okay, so I think there are a lot of people who haven't seen anything about it. I have a very brief demo. I don't have a live demo because these setups are always rather complicated. So, and I think if there's no opposition, I will just make a 2-minute or 4-minute demonstration. I have this as a recorded video here. Just quit this. And wow. So now I am afraid I have to readjust the scale. But let me check. This might be a little too small. Let me try. Okay, at first I have a very brief introduction where you can see how CDDB acts without any Samba. You can just start it up and it's running. Oh, this works. Okay. We have three windows here. I have a three-node cluster. Up there you see this was a GFS cluster I had in a virtual environment. And this is the CDDB basic configuration file. There's just a couple of options I've been setting here. There's a list of public addresses that can be configured by a file, and I have not yet enabled any management features. Now, I am showing the nodes file. This is the list of nodes on the internal cluster network for CDDB communication. And I have the public addresses, which is just a pool which CDDB distributes over all of the cluster. And now, what we will see, this is the onNode script. As I said yesterday, I simply love that. The onNode script is so cool. It's just a small shell script, but it uses SSH to just it reads the nodes file. It executes commands on all the nodes. Over there, we see a watch on the CDDB status output, which just monitors the status of the cluster. The first top three rows there, we see the three nodes, and we see that one node already has switched from unhealthy to OK state. We wait for the others also to appear. Down below is the IP distribution. All IPs currently are on node 2, and now the other nodes have become healthy, and now CDDB will try to achieve an equal distribution of the IPs on all the nodes. Another node has been added, and now we have 012, 012. And now it's just demonstrated, simulated to just like cable is plugged or the power cord is plugged on node 1, the service is stopped. This is becoming disconnected. CDB notices that, and shortly afterwards, the IPs are moved away from that node to another node. So, and then the next thing that's going to be demonstrated, I started it again. Quickly afterwards, it's disconnected. It's not connected, but unhealthy. And when it's become healthy after the recovery has completed, with a short delay, the IPs will be redistributed again. So there's a failback by default. Okay, I think this is sufficient for the first introduction. And just one other small demonstration which incorporates Samba, namely I demonstrate there is an I demonstrate the failure of SMB, so reconnect of SMB clients to other nodes. This is an SMB status output. On the right-hand side, there is again this CDB status, and I will call the SMB torture raw bench lock test with a UNC list. I have connections to all of the public addresses, so I will have six connections with running for a pretty long time, and I will see these connections moving between the nodes when the IPs are failed over and failed back. And here you see it's not just PID, but you have the PID pre-appended by the node number. This is, of course, necessary because all these are processes of Samba in the same cluster. Now I'm going to stop one of the CDDB daemons again to simulate failover. And I'll see a short disruption here down there. Now the locking rate has dropped, but it will be back again within a very short period of time. It has two of the processes have reconnected, and now we see all of them are on the two remaining nodes. And when I reactivate the nodes with a certain delay, a reconnect is triggered. So this is the basic functionality. Let's just abbreviate this here and go back to my slides. So this this has been recorded like about 1 year ago, and the basic functionality has, of course, not changed, but I'm going to talk now about what has been happening in the last year. Okay, about growth. The commit, here are a few commit figures, and you see that a decent amount of people have been contributing to the project in the past year. We can't, of course, in this small sub-project of Samba, not reach the high count figures that Twitch has cited this morning, but we have almost 1,000 commits in the last year, and you see that not only Ronnie has been contributing, but a couple of other people, including, which is very nice, you see here Mathieu Parron from the Debian packaging team has ported many fixes back to the scripts, and also there is Sumit Bose from the Red Hat packaging team, who is also here, I guess, in the conference. So it's very good. Please, packagers, join us on the IRC channel and send us mail and ask again if we don't incorporate the patches soon enough. Okay, yes, that's a question.
The 1,000 commits, that's independent of what Tridge reported earlier today?
It is a completely independent branch.
So if you put them together, we're over 10,000
yes.
For the year.
Yeah, that's it's cool. One thing you should know is the following. Currently, the client implementation of CTDB, there is not yet really a library for that. So there's an example implementation in CTDB, and there's the client implementation in Samba. So some of these commits, just a small figure, are basically incarnations of the same change, but on these two implementations. But, well, this is just like peanuts. Okay, so the number of contributors has grown, and then now growth in another respect. I called this slide stretching the limits. We have massive testing has taken place. I think it has been tested on hardware clusters with, well, last year it was like four or eight node clusters. This year, the testing has taken place with clusters with more than 20. I'm not sure, even more than 30 nodes. And and also massive testing has been done with, several 10,000 clients acting on the cluster and how they scale, how the cluster behaves if you just get rid of a bunch of them or all of them. And this has also uncovered a lot of Samba bugs or, well, misbehaviors that have been corrected. This is, for instance, something that Trish has found and also put fixes. So I'll just mention it briefly later. Okay. So the next. Yes, please.
Yesterday during your tutorial, we tried a demo and we tested something having to do with Opwox. I think this is one of the reasons why it's important to maintain a dialogue with the Microsoft folks. I spoke to them afterwards, and they said, absolutely, with SMB1, if you have an Opwox and you are caching all your locks and your writes locally and you lose a connection, whether it's to a cluster or to a single server, you lose everything in that cache.
So you're balked, basically.
Right, and it's nothing to do with clustering. It has to do with simple behavior of the Windows. So it's
basically
important.
So we guessed yesterday, yeah.
Right, okay. We guessed right yesterday, and the underlying message is that that's one of the reasons we should be working together to improve SMB2 to handle this kind of situation.
Definitely. Okay, now talking about the content of the, changes in the last. Here, and this all, on the one hand side, addresses changes to CDDB itself, but also changes to Samba, bug fixes to Samba that have come out of that. Okay, some sorted.
As a side comment, the behavior you're looking for.
Sorry. Yeah.
In terms of preserving the client cache, the behavior you're looking for is actually there in SMB2, the durable handle work.
There will be SMB2 in my slides, on the very last slide. Okay. Okay. So some assorted changes within CDDB code. While last year we still said that the file system underneath has to support byte range locks, POSIX byte range locks. This has become optional, so you can by now start CDDB just on a bunch of nodes without any connecting file system. It's possible, but of course you will definitely want file POSIX locks on your, and you will use the recovery lock for split brain prevention when using this as a file server in production. Several subcommands have been added to CDDB just as to facilitate the use and the handling of the databases. Just you have the opportunity to wipe a complete database. Just to give one of many examples, I just give this one because by chance I added that, but there are many, many more. The event script code, the C code handling all the calling of the event script has been reworked more or less completely. The so-called vacuuming and repacking code that takes care of removing old entries from the database has been streamlined and moved into the daemon. Before that, it was just calling out from event scripts all every 5 minutes, and this was putting a pretty high load, and so it has been moved into the daemon, and now it performs much better. The TDB code in CDDB has been synchronized with Samba Master, including the necessary changes and adaptations from both sides. So this is, for instance, something that Metze has done. The event script rework was partly work also of Rusty Russell, who had appeared in the commit counts above. He had been starting in the last year, and he had made massive contributions to TDB itself and also to the CDDB infrastructure. Rusty Russell is probably most known for his NetFilter code in actually the kernel hacker, but he is doing tremendous work on this user space code. Then there have been a couple of race conditions and even some deadlock scenarios between recoveries and transactions or write operations regarding the order of freezes in the databases. So there have been many internal things that I just want to mention briefly. Most of the things I'm mentioning have been either discovered and fixed by Volker, by Metze, by Ronnie. Of course, I'll talk a little bit more about the things I've been involved in with myself. One thing here, we have added local failover and load balancing mechanism. This was, well, I was involved in planning this with together and with Metze, and finally Metze implemented that. So originally, there was just one public interface per node, and you, of course you could do combine several with bonding, but if for some reason you didn't can't use bonding, then you are stuck with one interface, and so couldn't use the others. And if that interface came down, the whole node became unhealthy, addresses moved to the other node, and so on. So what is new now, you can just distribute public addresses on multiple interfaces on the same node. There are some clever things that, well, basically imitate what is what bonding can do for you, but you have a local failover, so if just one interface somehow is disconnected, then IPs are moved on the current on the same node, and only the node becomes unhealthy when all the interfaces are down, and you can do load balancing and failover on a node at first before failing the whole node. This is optional, it's not enabled by default, but it can be used now. Yeah. So this is new stuff. Well, this is the, these are the items I want to touch briefly in the CDDB changes. Then there are some items in the Samba code. There have been new Samba level tools, DBRep tool and DBRep torture. DBRep is our Samba internal back-ended interface for TDB access. It can use CDDB, it can use local TDB access, and so on. This is why this is called DBRep torture. This is similar to, well, it's a starting point of something similar to TDB torture maybe, but this is just doing many operations on the databases. And I ran it for testing in the cluster concurrently on several nodes to try to test for consistency of the write operations and so on. And there are many more tools similar in that spirit are in the queue, but have not been finished yet. There were these messaging storms that have been removed when many clients exit simultaneously. That is a fix I mentioned earlier that Twitch had provided. Now for a little bigger mention, there is now an extended server ID concept in Samba. There was a bug that was related to some recycled PIDs. It was just it was discovered in very intensive and thorough testing on the on clusters. The problem is this: logs, for instance, are associated to the processes that serve the corresponding connection, and this has a PID on the cluster. On the Samba server. In the cluster, this server ID is extended by the node number, as we have seen in the SMB status output. And the problem here is that when a client is exiting, and the next time the same log is accessed, it is checked whether this process is still active, and if it's not, then the old entry is removed. But it can happen in very active circumstances that the PID has been recycled by another process on the same node, might not even be a Samba process. And in order to, so in that case, this detection mechanism would fail and it would claim that the file still be locked. And so you could have been locked out of this file, couldn't write to it anymore. In even worse circumstances, in the worst case, data corruption could possibly occur. And so this has had to be worked around. And after several discussions, brainstorming together with Volker, we had the idea of adding some unique random identifiers to the server ID so that if by unlikely chance, the same PIDs were occurring, then you had at least different unique identifiers that are checked in that case. And this concept was implemented, this 64-bit random number. We had the new server ID database and tools in the cluster case where this clear first mechanism of these volatile TDBs doesn't work to really wipe the old server IDs when starting Samba on a new node. Another thing, okay, I have a little bit to hurry up a little bit. Another thing is the SMB Echo Responder. So especially when with distributed storage, you can have the calls, the case that file system calls can hang for way too long. So the SMBD blocks waiting for the return of some unlink or whatever call, and the Windows client somehow runs into a timeout. It starts sending SMB echo requests to see, hey, are you still alive? Are you still working on my request? And because, well, this process was still waiting for the result, we were just, the client was timing out. And so when the result came back, the client was gone. And so there was a new thing was implemented by Volker and Metze, basically. So we wanted to stay responsive, and so we did a scheme like before, an SMB echo responder. So if we know that that the main process for this connection is active, waiting for something, then and an SMB echo request comes in, we respond to that. If another request comes in, we just put it into the queue for the main process. That's the basic idea. And, well, this has solved this problem for us. Okay. There is a new TDB check infrastructure, which is very good. TDBs can become corrupted. And if in a cluster you have one node with an intact TDB and another node with a corrupted TDB, I'm speaking of the persistent TDBs here mostly, then it's a very bad situation. If the node just starts up without checking that, data corruption is all around. This is very bad. And so at first, TDB check code was added to the TDB core by Rusty. It was integrated into CDB in the following fashion. It was basically also implemented by Metze after, well, design discussions with me and Volker and so on. The databases, the persistent databases, are augmented by a health status. CDB checks at startup whether damaged persistent databases are around, and even after recoveries, this is also done, because recoveries are triggered when the node enters the cluster or leaves the cluster. So you can configure CDB to either start and wait or to fail starting when such a situation occurs, depending on this configuration variable. And in case that it starts, it won't pass the startup event. Monitoring and the usual operation is deferred until the persistent database in question is healthy again. And how can it become healthy? It can either become healthy by node with a healthy copy entering the cluster, or by admin interaction. He can do CDB wipe DB, or can restore a copy from a previous backup. So now this is a very big achievement. We can now really handle these kinds of corruption situations, which we couldn't before. Oops, did I say that? Local failure. Oh, sorry, this is duplicate. Then there were persistent transactions. This is the thing that I've been occupied with for many months. So originally, a little bit of history. In the first releases, there wasn't even support for persistence databases in CDB. It was just using these normal databases, and you put just the persistent databases onto the cluster file system and we're okay, basically. But this didn't prove very well, so support was added a little later. But this didn't have support for API level transactions, and we always had to work around this. And roughly a year later, API-level transactions for these persistent databases were added by Tritch and Ronnie. But, well, in the retrospective, probably this was a little too fast or, half-heartedly integrated, because in the last year we discovered many, many race conditions in that code. So you had just very short-lived locks in order to start the transaction, and then other processes could come in between. So when we really started torturing these write operations, they failed. They led to corruption in the databases. And after several months of debugging and fixing, putting many commits into the CDB code that fixed one race condition after another, we had a version of CDB in December 2009 that was pretty stable, but still we weren't sure, are many things hiding somewhere? So we thought the proper solution would be to have some notion of a global lock, and this is what was started and later added. I think this is wrong, December 2009, something is maybe it was also January 2010, we had a rewrite of the transaction code, which went like follows. A global lock mechanism was implemented by Volker. It was not the naive idea of just, or the first idea of just using an fcontrol lock on the cluster file system, because we don't want to rely on this feature on the file system. So this was implemented with using fetch lock mechanism on a normal databases. It's too much to explain all the details here. It is a global state that was missing before, indicating, okay, a transaction is not active. No one else may write to that database. Then read-write operations are performed completely in memory, preparing a Marshall buffer, and at commit time, these changes were distributed to all other nodes. So the actual commit code or transaction code in the client was significantly simplified in that. And after successfully distributing all the Marshall buffers to the other nodes, rolling out the transactions in the changes in the local transaction there, we drop the global lock. And if you want to play with that, you can even use the new NetGlock tool, which is also, it's DB wrap aware, so you can use it in a clustered or non-clustered fashion. It provides a very convenient shell tool for global locking. So this also incorporated changes in Samba and CDDB code, of course. Okay, we have almost no time left, but this is good because I've been rushing so much. So what's next? We'll have, I'm currently working on IDMAP performance. So IDMAP write has been too slow in the past for very active and very big environments where many IDMAPs have been created in TDB2. And finally, this allowed me to just pick up what I have been speaking about at last summer XP, namely the proposed IDMAP rewrite, which has been laying around for like a year or so now. So the problem was that there were several persistent transactions needed for creating one ID mapping. You had to go and create a new ID, and then you went and created the mapping in the database. And so, but this has to be atomic. But in order to be atomic, this has to be the allocation of IDs has to be hidden inside the ID mapping and not exposed as a WinBind operation and used separately. I want to remove all the allocation methods from the WinBind surface. I want to reduce the WinBind ID mapping API to just use SIDS to Unix IDs and Unix IDs to SIDS, nothing else. And this will also remove the single Unix ID allocator for ID mapping in that case, just hiding that in the back ends. There are a couple of problems associated with that I'm currently struggling to solve, because this allocator is currently also used in group mapping and in this LDAP as edit POSIX stuff where we are creating Unix users along with Samba users. And that's the one project. And now comes the last slide, the further tasks. There are more tools to be, at first there's this client library I've been mentioning in the first slides. This will be very important and we will be very much more reliable and have less code duplication with that. But this is just in discussion. There will be more tools for maintenance and diagnosis. Other tools, and once we have SMB2, you'll of course, especially with these durable file handles and so on, have a great benefit for using that on the cluster. Then in that case, we will be able to even switch active connections. But this is these are just, way off currently. I mean, maybe some work can be done on that in the present year, but this is not yet really scheduled. Okay, thank you. Are there any questions about it?
Thank you. Michael, Michael.
Sorry, I know it's getting tedious, me always asking a question. But ask me about the libctdb. So the reason why we didn't use the libctdb from the CTB distro in the first, when Volker and I first did this, was that at the time Samba 3 didn't have the event-driven system, and that library was based on the event library, which is now T-Event.
Yes.
I think it'd be really great to get that in common so that the Samba 3 clustering uses the same library that the CTDB command line tool uses.
Yeah.
So you don't have two implementations of that same protocol, which is a fairly delicate protocol.
Right.
So I think that's a particularly important thing to get.
It is extremely important. Another problem is that currently the client really directly writes to the database. So yeah. There will still, if we stick to that, which is a performance gain, we will still have some part of the client code really implemented in the client, but the API basically will be in this library. So that will be a great achievement.
Linking SMBD to that libctdb, I think, would be a great step forward.
It will, and it's currently not yet implemented, but actively discussed.
Yeah. One of the things that we have there is, for Samba 4, eventually we need the async API, or Samba 3 even also. But for other projects, we need thread safety. And getting those sanely together is an interesting design challenge.
In the CTDB API, you mean?
Yes, in the libctdb API. We need thread safety.
Which means propagating it to tevent, to talloc.
It's an interesting challenge.
Oh yeah, yes. Good luck.
That's. Any more questions?
Okay. There's one more question.
I saw a slide that said it's currently tested with 20 to 30 nodes, and there was a question mark to the 30 was in brackets.
I was not, when compiling these slides, I was not sure about the precise figure. Maybe someone in the room has more precise figures, I don't know, but something between, well, I think I've seen some 32 node cluster, but I'm not sure. Someone is nodding, yes, okay, at least 30. So I can remove the question mark. Thanks.
Okay, thank you once again.
Okay, thank you.